You know how it is, rocking and rolling and whatnot.
This is Dukes and Bell
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We are broadcasting live today from the Atlanta United training grounds, guys, and we've been waiting to get an opportunity to talk to Frank DeBoer. I saw a picture on Twitter a while back when he got to the airport, Mike, and he took a picture. He's like, I'm happy to be in Atlanta.
Right.
And everybody was going crazy, like, yeah, we got our guy. So, guys, he sits down with us here and joins us. And first of all, congratulations. I know this has been, a crazy few weeks, but congratulations.
Thank you very much.
As a lot of folks are wondering, and I think this is the thing that everybody is curious about, the balance, you know, how do you balance this talent? I don't know how well you know the personnel yet. Obviously, you know the wealth of talent we have, Frank, but, you know, everybody's going, what's he going to do? How's he going to balance his talent? Have you even thought about that at this point, or is it still getting to know the personnel?
Of course, still getting to know the personnel, but of course you have your ideas. But you know, when something is already, you know, function well, so yeah, why to change those kind of things? So I'm not some guy who suddenly changed the whole structure of the club and also, you know, the playing style. You know, they had a great success last year, great results. So the only thing that I maybe want to do, you know, the hardware is there, and so a little bit updated, and that's it. And of course, I have to know the players a little bit better. But what I heard, you know, it's a fantastic group that they want to fight for each other, you know, to get the best results for the team, for Atlanta United. And yeah, I want to continue in that way.
What did you know much about the MLS? What do you know about this type of soccer over here?
No, it's very enthusiastic. I think technical wise, maybe we can still, you know, improve in that. But you know, the level is quite high. What I saw, of course, the most difficult thing is maybe the traveling.
Right.
You know, the different time zones, staying at airports. Yeah, that's especially in Holland. Of course, in Spain, when I played for Barcelona, we always travel, but not that kind of distances. So that's going to be a hell of a difference for us. But
right.
Most players, you know, I used to do that. And yeah, I'm really looking forward, you know, to play our first home game, you know, in the stadium. It looked so great, you know, especially in the final, of course. But I want to feel and experience myself, of course.
Frank DeBoer joining us, guys, here on Dukes and Bell. New manager for our Atlanta United. He was introduced to the media today and introduced to Atlanta. I heard you say that you told your agent you felt good about this job. Expand on that.
Yeah, because the core values, you know, what's important for Atlanta United. Also, I think Arthur Blank, the owner, is a very good example of that. That, you know, the community is the most important thing, you know, for the club, to entertain the fans. And all that around gave me such a good feeling. And, you know, of course, they already proved that in 2 years you be champions and then you do something good. And, you know, what I saw, what I spoke with Darren Eels and Carlos Bocanegra and, of course, also with Arthur Blank. Yeah, it all feels, you know, like, yeah, this is top climate, the sport top climate, and they want the best for everybody, but also for the community, and all that comes together. You have environment.
Frank
DeBoer
is with us, guys, and if you heard the press conference, you know that if you don't know the background, over 112 appearances for the Dutch national team, legendary player for Ajax and also for Barcelona. So we're excited, obviously, because you're a name brand. But, I mean, when you're a coach and you come in, as you said earlier, you're not like you're going to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
You see what works. A lot of fans are asking, is it a 4-3-3 or what are we going to see? What do you think?
No, of course, last season they played different kind of systems, and we have to see what's best for our team. And you know, the most important games they play 5-3-2 or 3-5-2. How you can, you know, if you dominate, it's 3-5-2. If you play more defensively, it's 5-3-2. Of course, you know, I know to play 4-3-3. I did it myself a lot when I was coached at Ajax. We always played like that. So I really have to see, okay, at the end you want to win also a game. So what's best for the team? And so it depends what kind of quality players we have on the pitch.
Let's clarify. How many languages do you speak?
I speak Spanish, I speak English, I speak Dutch. I can understand like 70% or 80% of German. To speak it's, then I trip myself, you know, so it's not a good thing. I was very close to speak Italian because, mm-hmm. of course, when I was coaching Inter, mm-hmm. I was really on that edge that you really, hey, now I'm getting there, you know, right. Make sentences. And then I get sacked and then, yeah. Maybe I was so angry that I didn't want to speak for a couple of months Italian. But I think I will catch it up when I really, getting into it again.
The toughest one for you to learn was what?
Arabic when I played in Qatar. But I played also in Turkey, you know. That's so hard, you know. Sometimes you have language when you mix English, Dutch, and Spanish together. If they talk slowly, you think, oh, okay, that's that word. But some languages, you know, you cannot have connections with.
Well, you're here at a good time at Atlantic because obviously there's a love affair, not only with the media, the fan base, everyone's going bananas. When we try to explain, as Frank DeBoer joins us here live at the training facility, Marietta, the scrutiny that coaches and managers are under in Europe, it just seems bananas. The tabloid press in Italy and England, it seems like it would just, you put one foot wrong, you simply get everybody on top.
Yeah, especially, for example, when as a player, when I was playing for Barcelona, you know, they have two local sports papers. And normally they have like around 15, 20 pages about Barcelona. So they have to, follow everything. Yeah. They have to fill it. So, you know, so everywhere you were, you know, that there is a camera crew there or newspaper. So, and then you have also the Madrid newspapers. It's the same, they 15 right. pages of Real Madrid, but also like five of Barcelona. So, yeah, you get used to it, but you have to take care of yourself and be careful also because you one mistake and it is already printed in the newspaper. So, and also as a coach, you know it's there, and you have to be careful what you say because especially for in England, you know, they try really if you do something, you say something stupid, it's directly in the newspaper or that's. Getting one quote in one sentence, so and that's and people only reading that quote, and you have a stamp on you directly. So,
yeah. DeBoer says no talent. Boom, yeah. It's out there, right?
Yeah.
All right. It's Frank DeBoer, our new manager, guys. Here on Dukes and Bell, we're live at the training grounds here for Atlanta United. When we heard your name. A lot of United fans were like, okay, so what do we know about this guy? And we're trying to find out things, right? And you know what pops up. Boom, Crystal Palace, right?
Yes.
What did you learn? And we're just trying to understand, and I think it was a bad situation, but I want to hear from you. What did you learn from that experience, and what can you maybe take from that and use here? Because people see that, and they go, well, I don't know about this guy. It was a bad situation, right?
It was, both Inter and Crystal Palace. I came in a bad situation. Of course, Inter, didn't perform or won nothing in 4 or 5 years. So they said to me, okay, we want to change something. We want to go a different direction. So if you get Frank de Boer at your club, you're going to have something different than before. Also, right. The playing style. So they wanted to play like offensive, dominating games. And Crystal Palace, of course, it's a different kind of story. They always play for relegation, but they really want to be a very solid club in the Premier League. So like Southampton did, when they came, they played European football, not the English style. They want to play from the back, And what they did, after that, I think after 2 years they already played the European League. So that kind of philosophy and that kind of structure they wanted with me as a coach also. And then suddenly we have to play like relegation football again. No, that's not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. But that it needs time and. But yeah, nowadays, especially in the Premier League, it's all about the money. Mm-hmm. So they thinking about £100 million they get every year from the federation, and if they have 40 points, it's enough. Mm. And for me, I don't want. Of course, I want to be champion every club that I'm coach. But I know, that's very hard when you are coach of Crystal Palace. But I have a philosophy. I want to play like this, and if we play like this. the possibility that we are in the middle of the Premier League. But yeah, that's a very good possibility, and it's the same here. I don't want to talk about championship. If we have an idea, and our philosophy will show on the pitch, at the end, I think, it's a very good chance that we are also on top. Mm. But first, we have to follow that philosophy, and I think that's the way you go. Not first, okay, champions. Okay, how are we going to do that? No, first, you have your ID, and then probably you're going to be one of the top teams in the MLS.
Frank DeBoer is with us, guys, our new manager for Atlanta United. And for our fans who are not hardcore soccer fans, just real quick, just to give a primer on the English Premier League, it's a very capitalistic way of doing things. If you're in the bottom fourth, or bottom three, you go down, you get relegated. So basically it would be like the minor league. If you're the worst team in the American League, Carl, you go down to the minor leagues and the best team comes up. So there's that pressure to make that money. That's part of the situation that Frank inherited at Crystal Palace. Your reputation also precedes you as an amazing coach developing youth when you were at Ajax. And we've got tremendous youth with Atlanta United too. We've also got a very compressed schedule for you to deal with. So how much are we going to see? Obviously, you got to get familiar with them, but seeing some of the younger guys.
Now, of course, you know, that is one of my tasks also, you know, when they asked me for this job, you know, how interested are you in developing and getting players into the first team? And I think, you know, I've always been a coach to pay attention to the youth academy. I watch the games, and if I see a really talented player, you know, I want to see them to perform at the training facilities at the first team, how they are reacting. And I'm not hesitating when somebody is good to put them in the first team. And you know, that's also we have to get into, you know, that kind of feeling that Atlanta United is a club that also get his youngsters to give minutes. And hopefully, you know, the fans will recognize that, hey, that's our homegrown kid, you know. So then you feel it's your own. And I think that that feeling, every supporter at Ajax has that feeling, you know. Their philosophy is like 70. Hopefully, when it can, like 70% of the selection will be homegrown players. Sometimes they succeed. Sometimes there is a generation, of course, they have to buy some. But it's our lifeline. And I think, you know, when you want to do that, it takes time. Because you have to create a good academy. And so everybody, young kid, know, hey, this is the best development to come here to Atlanta United. And they give me a chance to play in the fantastic stadium here in Atlanta.
Well, we're looking forward to it. I know some fans are wondering, and it may be way too early to say, what are you going to do, 4-3-3? What are you going to play? Obviously, sometimes games dictate what you want to do. Yeah. But traditionally, what has been your style for fans?
It was always 4-3-3, that's for sure. And I think it's maybe the best way. But still, you know, what I saw last season, especially in the playoffs, this team was very feeling common to play the 5-3-2 system. And so we have to wait. They also showed they can 4-3-3, but in the most difficult games, they played 5-3-2. So we have to wait. And I think both can be very attractive. You know, transition game is very attractive because in 1 second you are on the other side. And But we have to wait and see.
Hey, man, before we let you go, how familiar are you with Atlanta? You getting acclimated yet? It's hotel living for a minute now, isn't it?
Yeah, and on Saturday we had a tour with some of our people in Atlanta United. And we show some areas maybe where we can live and everything. And, it looks all very nice. It's going to be very difficult to choose where I'm going to live. Of course, I don't want to live that far from the training ground, but I heard the traffic can be horrendous, but yeah, we have to wait. But we'll wait and see. But also, my wife have a big vote in that, of course.
Right.
I'm a lot of time away, of course. So we're gonna see. But right now, everything looks fantastic.
Frank, thank you so much for stopping
thank
by.
Thank you very much.
We're looking forward to building a great relationship with you, having you on our air. Obviously, United fans are excited about what's going to happen with our team. New era with Frank DeBoer, guys.
I can promise them I give them 100% every day.
100%, guys.
Sweet.
All right, with that, let's give you a chance to win some money right now playing our national signing bonus contest.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is
Planet, P-L-A-N-E-T. Planet. Mike, what's that song? Coming to my planet soul.
You're going to sing that in front of Skipper?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Planet is the word, guys.
It's Planet, guys. Text that to 72881 for your shot at $1,000 right now, guys, in our National Signing Bonus Contest. Plenty more on United. Plenty more on the NFL playoffs, guys. It's all on the way on Dukes and Bell.
We are Dukes and Bell. Happy Monday. We're live at Atlanta United's training grounds, guys, in Marietta. We just had a chance to talk to our new manager. Kudos to Tata. But as I said, this is a new era. And Frank DeBoer is the guy now. He's going to take over. And Mike, he's got a lot of toys, as you like to say, to play with. And,
right.
You know, I'm curious to see what he does. He just mentioned there at the end of the interview, and you'll hear it again in the 6 o'clock hour. But, you know, his style as far as tactics and, you know, whether he's going to play 4-3-3 or not. He said, listen, I think it's 4-3-3. But I do think within that you can still do some things that we've seen with our club.
Right. And we were talking about this earlier for guys who didn't know the story. I mean, he won championships with Ajax, the Manchester, or the Yankees or Red Sox, if you will, of the Dutch League, and where he was a legendary player. And he played in, as I said, over 100 international competitions for them. So the guy's, I mean, he's world-renowned. And unfortunately, he goes to a team like Inter Milan, and they're trying to change the style of play, and they didn't have the patience for it. Same thing happened at Crystal Palace, but there's been three other managers went through the same thing that he went through. So, again, oh, we got him here. More importantly, everything's in place. Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra have got the machine ready to go, man. Just hand the keys to the man, let him go to work.
All right, we're going to get a chance to talk to the play-by-play voice of Atlanta United and our analyst, Mike Conte and Jason Longshore, on the way in less than 15 minutes, so stay tuned. We've been, obviously mixing in a lot of football conversation, and we want to get back to that right now here because coming off the weekend, and our Falcon Report's on the way too, guys, at 5 o'clock, but coming off the weekend, you know, as I said to start the show, we are fearing here in Atlanta our worst nightmare could come true, and that's the Patriots-Saints Super Bowl. Now, don't know if that's going to play out, but, you know, you've been saying this all day. Man, the Eagles had them. They had them on the ropes.
I know, because my nightmare is, you know, walking into Fido or wherever you want to go, and or during Super Bowl weekend, and you hear he's like, give me another pint of Guinness. And you who dat? Who dat? It'd be like echoing through the bar. You don't. Nobody wants to be around that. But the Eagles, now here's the thing with the Eagles. Yes, they got the advantage of the doink, 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 the Parkey miss. But you know what? They have a team which has got battle-tested guys. They got a dude in Foles. And by the way, Foles did everything in his power. Yes, he threw two picks. The first one, he underthrows it, which then got the momentum rolling for New Orleans. The last one, that's on Alshon Jeffrey. And I thought it was pretty cool how everybody in that locker room had his back, including Doug Peterson. But, man, they had him down 14-0, and they're driving. And that pick, and then you touched on it, the fake punt, then the long drive, and they were off and running. They took the body blows, and then they were able to sustain it. And then even then, Eagles are driving late, and the way the clock is working out, you're saying, holy cow, they can get in there and score and win this game with a touchdown.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffrey has taken the blame. It wasn't his fault. I mean, listen, they fell apart long before he missed that
ball. Drop was definitely his fault. I mean, it goes right through your hands, and you're a guy that's made that catch a million times.
Yeah, not that play. I'm talking about you can't put the game on him's shoulders. I think the Eagles had
the game.
If
you're an Eagles fan, you will.
Of course they will. They had the game in hand, and yeah, right. Because here's the thing we don't know, and everybody, you know, we always speculate about these things. Well, if Jeffrey catches that ball, you don't know that. You don't know if they go and score. I mean, what I do know is it would have gave them another opportunity to maybe move the ball. At the end of the day, though, the Eagles didn't finish. They didn't get it done. And, you know, when you lose this way, 2014, interception at the end of the game, as you said, Mike, the ball goes through probably your best wide receiver's hands,
right.
You know, outside of Golden Tate in those goal line situations this season, it stinks. But one of the things that we've been talking a lot about is, and for Saints fans, all the hoopla and who dat, slow down, because you just lost one of your best defensive players and one of the best defensive players in the league.
Yeah, Sheldon Rankins is part of that new-look defense. You know how we retooled our defense through the draft, and they did the same thing also with the right free agent moves. That's a huge piece. That's their Fletcher Cox. That's their Aaron Donald. Not comparing him to Aaron Donald, but he does a bunch of things, stopping the run, getting penetration, moving the press in the pocket back. He's gone. You know, he's got an Achilles. Not only is he gone, he's gone for the first couple of weeks of next season at best. You know, this late in the season, had that injury. So Rankins is a huge hit for the Saints. And let's be honest, Saints were not the same team we saw against the Eagles in the regular season. They might not be the same team we saw against the Rams earlier this regular season. Let's hope the Rams learn from their mistakes. And now you combine this C.J. Anderson along with Gurley. They got a nice 1-2 punch to run the ball.
Yeah, C.J. Anderson was a pleasant surprise over the weekend as, you know, he really took charge and had over 100 yards, 123 yards.
That's a good Cowboy defense. They just steamrolled.
They ran right through them. It was like a hot knife through butter. And that to me was the most surprising thing as how easily they commanded them up front. But here's the other thing. They stopped the run. Zeke guys had 47 yards. You're going, wait a minute. They didn't go to him? No, they went to him.
He couldn't get anything.
He couldn't move him.
And Dominick Sue was motivated, by the way.
He was.
Aaron Donald, man. I mean, we all know what that guy is. I mean, we've got to go find that bigger compliment to Grady in the draft to have that kind of stop in the middle. That's what we need. You know, there's a couple of guys both wearing Alabama and Clemson jerseys who look pretty good in a Falcons uniform.
Yeah, listen, Donald is special. He's on a different level. But in Dominick Sue, I mean, you put him next to that. That is a dominant line. And they finally, to me, Mike, played like it. This is what.
Because I've seen Sue dog it. I've seen, even in a Rams uniform, I've seen Sue not look like he's motivated. At least, the guys take plays off on defensive line, but sometimes it's obvious that he is.
But remember in the offseason, and this goes back, and again, the Rams are not here. They're not in Atlanta yet. They've not won a Super Bowl. That might happen. But remember this offseason, no one was more active with free agency than the Rams.
They won March. Remember that?
They did. And everybody went, oh, my God, look at the names and the brands that they're going out and getting. They improved. They thought their DBs, up front. And, Mike, now it seems like it's paying dividend on top of the offense that they had. Jared Goff didn't even have to throw the ball, guys, to really win that football game.
Mm.
He didn't. He runs on a 3rd and 7 for 11 yards to finish them off. So I just think, you know, that if you believe the Rams have to have Jared Goff throw for 400 yards to win this game, it doesn't happen that way.
Now, the thing is, though, as we said, the Saints team, you know, they were taking some shots. I mean, if you don't throw that – if Alshon Jeffrey can hold on to that football, they've got enough time to drive down the field, and things are looking good for the Eagles there. The Saints are beatable. And it's funny because Carl and I, we said this. And first off, you know, we don't want to sound like homers because the Falcons got swept by the Saints and we're not even sniffing the playoffs. But when you look at – the Saints are not unbeatable. You know, they're not – as many big numbers and big games they put up, like that Eagles regular season game, damn it, brother, we were in it. We blew it because we couldn't get any stops in the game in Atlanta. And we jacked it. We blew fumbles and turnovers in the red zone of the game down there in the Superdome. But, I mean, it's just that much of difference between being a 7-9 team and a team that could be going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's something we're going to talk more about coming up in the Falcon Report. Your thoughts are welcome. 404-741-0929. Talking some NFL playoffs. So Cowboys fall to the Rams 30-22. And, by the way, again, I don't think Gurley's 100%. He had 115 yards. He did, you know, look good on that 30-yard run or whatever it was for the touchdown. But this is why I think C.J. Anderson was so important, and he gives you a different dynamic at that running back position because he's more like a bowling ball. Meanwhile, the other games, you know, when you talk about the Patriots and what they did to the Chargers, that one was over before it began. It's 35-7 at half. I'm like, what else can I snack on and what else can I drink? This thing was ugly from the jump.
I got to admit, during the timeouts and commercial breaks, I was watching The Sopranos on HBO. But, yeah, man, the Tom Brady Patriots, we'll play some of the sound bites for you coming up. But Brady and Bill Belichick, and Mumbles might not admit it, they all heard the squawk and they all heard the talk that the Patriots aren't the same Patriots. Very uncompelling regular season. Yeah, I mean, to win double digits and, you know, be the 2 seed, right? How many teams would take that? I tell you what, man, they all talked about it almost to a man. Gronk said it too. They heard this, and they wanted to prove the point. They came up with an offensive plan. They were throwing stuff out there, and I said it earlier, I love Tony Romo. Can't wait to hear him call in the Super Bowl. But Romo did such a great job of saying, they're pulling stuff out from 5 years ago on the playbook, you know, and the insight about how, the things that Josh McDaniels, how we always give him credit for mixing up run and pass, but, boy, they were doing it exemplary. And then, of course, taking away what San Diego was trying to do offensively, Phillip Rivers never got in a rhythm.
Yeah, Rivers, and that gets me to another point, you know, and it's easy to bang on a guy like this when his team gets blown out like this. But what is Phillip Rivers' legacy in these playoffs? You know, he's been in this game. This was the second AFC Championship game. Again, they come up short, and you just wonder, you know, I said if this was going to be the year for Phillip Rivers, they had all the pieces, right? Defensively, they're playing great. Going into this game, offensively, he's got all these dynamic wide receivers. Right. You got a run game with Gordon. They don't do jack. And then when the game got carried away, you know, in the third and fourth quarter where you're throwing the ball every down, I'm like, okay, you know, there was no way I felt at any moment that they were going to get back into the game just because of the way the Patriots had commanded the run game. So, big shout-out to Sony Michel, man. 29 carries, 129 yards for Sony Michel.
We were talking about him all last week, and I was saying, watch him be the X factor. First off, he's healthier now. You know, they have that extra, you know, the extra week certainly helps Sony get back to where he needs to be. But, again, it's guys like Edelman down the sideline fighting for extra yards, getting the first down. Gronk, not even 100%. You can see it. Not as big a target as he's been in games past. But they just find a way. And then certainly on the defensive side, you know, San Diego tried to come with 7 DBs, try to throw some different looks at Tom Brady. Seen it all, been there, done that.
Yep.
And now 0-8, as you mentioned earlier, Phillip Rivers, 0-8 versus Tom Brady in his career.
Yeah. Again, I've never been a believer in Phillip Rivers in this way, that he was going to put a team on his back and take him over the top. Yesterday totally was not all his fault. But, again, this is on his watch. It's on his record. And you go, here's Phillip Rivers in another one of these big games, and his team comes up short. You know, and part of me feels bad for the guy. The other part of me is Phillip Rivers is going to go down as one of these guys as a really good quarterback, great numbers, not a winner in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you know, Mike Williams from Clemson, who got a star-crossed start to his career with the Chargers, he made a couple of nice catches. He also had a couple of drops. You know what I mean? There's some plays there that need to be made. Phillip, out of the wind, knocked it down, but there was a sort of a jump ball that hits him in the hands. Receivers, that's the thing. You got to help your guy out. There's parts in the game where you got to make some tough NFL plays, and the San Diego receivers weren't doing that. And then, as we said, New England, they just kept the foot on the gas. I mean, he's ticked off about having a punt when they're up by four touchdowns.
Yeah, Brady's a competitor, man. It's special what they put together.
Real quick, we got a second left here. Andy Reid and his postseason failures versus Belichick on the road. Who you like?
The difference is that I think for the first time since maybe McNabb, all right, Andy Reid has a dynamic quarterback that can make plays. You cannot defend Pat Mahomes the way you went after Phillip Rivers. You knew Rivers wasn't getting out of the pocket. I actually like the Chiefs.
Wow.
At home.
Great googly moogly. All right, brother. All we want to see is Rams and Chiefs. Don't we, fans? We'll come back.
Please.
What's coming up next on Dukes and Bell?
Well, we're going to talk to our man Mike Conti and Jason Longshore. We're going to get their thoughts. They've been out here all day. Frank DeBoer, where our club is headed. These guys are getting back to training tomorrow, believe it or not. CONFACAF right around the corner. It's next. It is Dukes and Bell coming up. Falcon Report in less than 20 minutes, guys. How close are we to getting back to what we saw yesterday and having a chance to play in a NFC championship game? We'll discuss right now, though, the two guys that you get a chance to hear right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. They call Atlanta United Games and did a hell of a job this season. It was fun listening. They brought perspective to the matches that I think everybody enjoyed, and certainly being a part of a championship season. It's Mike Conti and our man, Jason Longshore. They've been here all afternoon, guys, and get both of you guys' take on, you know, Frank DeBoer. He's introduced to the public in Atlanta today, and as I told Frank when he joined us, I thought he did a really good job, but I think there was some people who were looking at this going, what are we getting, you know?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's been a very nice, relaxing, long off season. So, good to see you again,
Six
Jason.
6 weeks.
Right?
Look, I think Frank DeBoer is someone who brings instant credibility to a club that already had a pretty good dressing room that probably didn't need a coach with an overwhelming amount of credibility, because it's such a good culture here with Atlanta United right now. But, oh, bonus, you found a guy who was a legendary player, had unprecedented success at one of the biggest clubs in the world, and someone, you know, the thing that struck me today about Frank, Jason, was the guy's got a presence. Mm-hmm. I mean, he comes off as someone who is very serious, who knows what the heck he's doing, obviously. And he walks into a room, and you just feel that instant credibility. And that's what stood out to me the most today about the way that he navigated the press conference, I think in three different languages, by the way.
Yes, he did.
The way that he navigated the interview with you. He just strikes me as a very, very impressive man.
I'll go back to what Carlos Bocanegra said after the hire was made, that he's got a chip on his shoulder. I think he has something to prove. After the last two jobs where he was in positions with clubs that could not give him what he needed just to do his job, he's worried about all these other things behind the scenes that you don't have to worry about here. I mean, we've been around this club since it started now, and you see how first class everything is. All Frank has to do is come in and coach. That's what every manager wants.
It's almost, I mean, we don't say it's turnkey because he's going to put his stamp on it, but, I mean, All the things are in place. And, you know, we'll talk more about the amateur draft and how amazing the super draft worked out. And we got another young stud now in the pipeline. And, you know, he's also famous, and we talked about it in the interview, for developing younger talent from his time at Ajax in Holland. So that we didn't really think about that from a fan standpoint, but that's obviously important to Darren Eales.
I think that's big with a guy like Christian Eriksen, who was at Ajax, was not in the first team before Frank took over the first team in December 2010. Frank knows him from the academy, puts him into the first team, eventually makes the club a lot of money when he moves on to Tottenham, and now he's one of those players that's in high demand in the Premier League. That's Frank, I think, has no fear of turning the keys over to a young talent who shows that they're ready. That's a perfect fit for Atlanta United.
It is our guys, the voice of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti, analyst Jason Longshore joining us here. We're live at the training grounds, guys, have been all day and bringing you exclusive coverage you'll hear nowhere else as we are covering our champion, Atlanta United. Mike, as we talk about, you know, this quick turnaround, and I was talking with Jason about this, it's hard to believe, and you know, from a fan standpoint, you go, all right, for example, offseason for football or the offseason for baseball. And you go, well, guys don't get out of shape these days, right? And it's been 6, 8 weeks, whatever it's been since we won the championship, and these guys are back at training tomorrow. And I just said to Jason, I said, these guys are not out of shape. And he said, no, but this stretch of games is going to really challenge us.
It is, but I think they're up for it, and it's going to be a test of depth. Roster depth, and we'll get into that later. Jason and I spoke to Julian Gressel today. Now just think about this. Julian Gressel wins the MLS Cup, has his birthday, I think, what, the following Monday. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to Florida to get married. Then he goes to Cozumel to have his honeymoon, and he's back in town today. And I said, wow, it must have been really nice to get away from soccer for a little while. And he said, yes, but he's still doing all the physical conditioning work that you have to do in an abbreviated offseason. And this is something that Jason can speak to a lot more intelligently than I, but I remember last year, now obviously under a different manager,
right.
Greg Garza told us in Nashville after that game, the first time Atlanta United was really even training with the ball was that week. And I'm not saying that that's going to be the same case here, but this first month of training camp is really fitness and conditioning. And you're not going to see this team's tactical identity really develop maybe until the week before they go to Costa Rica.
Right. I mean, you think back to a couple – the team had been in training camp a couple weeks, I think, before that Nashville game last time. Your first game now that's going to count is in a CONCACAF Champions League game. Oh, yeah, away as well in one of the tougher places to play. But you have to build that base of fitness first. We've seen what injuries can do to a team with the Falcons this season. You have to do everything you can to avoid injuries. And the sports science department here, and that's something Frank DeBoer's talked about in, I think, every interview he's given today, is how important that is. That off-season training plan, that's something that helped these guys prepare to be at a higher level of fitness coming into training camp.
It is our guys, man, Jason Longshore at Longshoe, and Mike Conti, MikeConti9. What is your Twitter handle?
MikeConti9.
That's right, yeah. And they joined us here live in Marietta at the United Training Facility. Let's talk about the draft. We had a chance to debrief over it. Anderson Seydou, young man, is an amazing story. If you hadn't already heard about it, it was a nice write-up in the AJC about his travels and his travails, too, from Ghana all the way to Jersey with a family that took him in, then to UCLA and now to the MLS. Why was he the last guy selected? I'd ask Darren, but for guys who missed it earlier, how do we get this guy to be a stud?
Size. And it's crazy that we're still at this point in American soccer that you have clubs that will overlook talent because of size. Last time I checked, Atlanta United is not exactly a big team in terms of size, height, thickness, all that. They can play, though. And that's what Anderson Seydou does, is he can play with the ball at his feet.
By the way, the Atlanta United holding midfielder that led them to the MLS Cup and scored a goal, the first ever playoff goal in club history, how tall is Eric Rometty?
Not very.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
they're all 5'6", 5'7", 5'8", tops.
Jason's 100% right. Like, this isn't an issue. I also think he may have slid a little bit because he's not a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. You do worry about using the international spot. But, hey, I mean, here we are in Atlanta. We'll take it.
Right.
We got the Combine MVP with the last pick in the first round. And I tweeted this on Friday. To me, this feels a lot like how John Collins, for whatever reason, just kind of fell to the Hawks there at 19. And you don't really understand why. You don't really understand how. But here he is, clearly the best player on the board. The Hawks take him. Now look at what we have. Had he not been hurt for the first month of the season, John Collins would be going to the All-Star
game
in his second year. So Anderson Seydou is coming into a program here where he's probably going to play with ATL UTD2 this year. The international spot might come into play as a big reason why. Mm-hmm. But he's going to get a lot of games, a lot of USL games. And he's going to have an opportunity to prove himself. And I like what he told me on Friday, and I know you played the interview. He compared himself a lot to N'Golo Kanté as someone who came from a small club, had to prove himself a little bit. He said he fit in his shoes. And, by the way, if we drafted N'Golo Kanté on Friday, Atlanta United's going to be putting a few more Baconators there in the big building over there as they have one right now.
Speaking of the combine, just real quick to give people a general idea, what are we talking about? Is this like a movie where a Seydou is like, wow, look at a Seydou. He kicks it, and they're like, wow, he can't believe he kicked it 80 yards. I mean, what are we talking about at the combine? You know?
Here's the thing about the combine for MLS at this point. It is a chance for some teams who don't have the scouting department and don't have the infrastructure that Atlanta United has to decide who they're going to draft. Atlanta United, and we talked to Darren Eales, and that interview will go up on the digital side here in a little while. Darren said Asaidu was in their top 10 across the board out of people who watched the combine, period. They thought there's no chance this guy's fallen to 24. And he did because they evaluate talent in a different way than other clubs in this league.
Okay. It's a Jason Longshore, Mike Conte, guys, our broadcast team. And I said this earlier, I'll say it again. Jason is like our go-to guy for any soccer question, even like 8 in the morning on a Saturday. I go, this is an answer for only Jason Longshore. And sure enough, you don't sleep. You know, he's always there. Jason, what's the fastest animal on the planet Earth? The cheetah. All right, real quick, what about the young guys? Bello now, because Garza moves on to Cincinnati, who we'll see in our home opener. But what's the back line going to look like?
I think Bello has every opportunity to be the guy at left back. Now, we'll see how the shape looks from game to game. As Frank said, you know, there's going to be situations where it's 3 in the back, where it's 4 in the back, sometimes 5 in the back. It's going to depend on the opponent, on form, on fitness level, on schedule. All that's going to go into it. But Bello goes in with a clear path to be the guy at left back.
Gressel going to be okay in this system? And what Frank talked about the 4-3-3. I mean, Gressel, because of his unique skill set, how he gives such great service.
I think in the mix at right back, where you might need a little more depth right now, the way it looks, they'll find it. Look, best 11 are going to play. They'll find a spot for the best 11 on this team. And remember, again, you're going to be going into match compression where it's going to be okay to give Julian Gressel a day off,
right,
because he will have played 6 other games in the span of 2 weeks. It's going to be okay.
Potentially 7 games from February 21st to March 17th.
Yeah. Mike Conte, Jason Longshore. Guys, great job.
Hey.
Looking forward to a quick turnaround and getting back at it.
This has been fun. Shout out to Matt Moore, by the way, for hooking
great
us
job
up today. It's been a great day out here.
Thank you guys for stopping by. Hey, we've got the Falcon Report on the way, guys. We watched the games over the weekend, divisional round. How far are we from getting back to this point? We'll talk about it next.
Now, you go on our afternoon show all the time. We're going to hijack you from them, because I've heard you calling in or passing the phone along or in the ride along. We're going to steal you from the afternoon, guys.
Hey, not a problem. Somebody owes me a case of Hey Man Beer, though. That's all I'm saying. That's all.